Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, Mill Creek View podcast listeners, and Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to you all. Here I am back in the studio with producer Steve in Lidwood, Washington, today only. Back home tomorrow. I have another great guest for you, focused on our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very special guest, Andrea Gomez. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Andrea Gomez, Center for Renewing America. The Citizens for Renewing America's mission is no less than to renew an American consensus of a nation under God with unique interests worthy of defending that flow from its people, institutions, and history, where individuals' enjoyment of freedom is predicated on just laws and healthy communities. Andrea Gomez, maybe Andrea, she'll tell us in a second, State Director, Tennessee. Andrea Gomez has spent nearly a decade as an elementary school teacher working with students from diverse populations and languages in California and Tennessee. Recently, she found herself taking a stand against mandates in her school district, which ignited a passion for studying the Constitution and the principles of conservatism. With a master's degree in education, Andrea believes the historical, biblical, and constitutional knowledge is the key to renewing our country and culture. Andrea lives in Tennessee with her husband and two children. Andrea, did I say it right, or is it Andrea?
It is Andrea. You got
Andrea,
it right the first
okay.
Time.
Sorry. Yeah. Thank you very much. Well, thanks for coming on the show with us today. How are you? Happy holidays.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me on the show.
Awesome. Well, you, like me, are a refugee from California. Have you found good Mexican food in Middle Tennessee yet?
I've changed my standard of what's considered good Mexican food.
Very politically correct. Nice. Why did you choose Tennessee as your home?
Yeah, we actually researched several states. It took us close to 10 years to land in Tennessee. We were impressed by the people. The climate was pretty well. Today and tomorrow, for the next couple of days, this isn't what we were signing up for, but for the most part, the climate is very tolerable.
Expecting about 8 degrees out down there, right?
Yeah, it's going to get, I think with wind chill, it might get negative. But yeah. So that's a first for us here.
That's what I get to fly
home
to. In
the 7 years I've been here.
And your husband agrees with you?
Oh, he loves the cold, but we're both very happy to be here in Tennessee. Wouldn't change it for the world. Wish we had moved sooner. But we really were looking for conservative politics. We were looking for, you know, we're looking at all the numbers as far as unemployment, all of that. And Tennessee was the best place for us.
And, you know, you'll be a keynote speaker with Gary Humble, who was my very first Tennessee interview, and Kathy Harms at the upcoming East Tennessee Grassroots Leadership Summit in Sevier County on January 7th. What is happening there?
Yeah, so that's the focus is going to be on election integrity and education issues as well. Those are the top issues that I hear from the grassroots are the most concerning. They're the top priorities. So going into this next legislative session, they will be top priorities as well. You'll see a lot of education, a lot of you'll see parents' rights and definitely election integrity. These are big priorities for Tennesseans.
Yeah, you and me being refugees from California, I left in 1998 before I had kids, but I could see where it was going. I didn't have kids back then, so I was more interested in business-friendly environment of income tax-free Washington and booming software industry, minting millionaires. But now it's pretty unsafe for children. I don't know if you saw, but San Francisco is certainly not anything like Tennessee, what parents would recognize, but they just last week made it known they're doubling down on teaching kids fringe gender ideology. A teaching guide for elementary grades issued by the San Francisco Unified School District demands that teachers begin confusing children about gender as early as kindergarten, urging teachers to tell five-year-olds that it is normal to explore and be curious about gender, and that gender identity is determined by the way we feel inside or what's right for us. And note of it requires parents, none of it requires parents to know what's going on. What is going on?
Yeah, so I wish we could say that this kind of nonsense is only happening in San Francisco. It's not. There is no corner of the country that is not being touched by this. This is an infiltration of Marxist theology into our education system. It's been creeping up, but it's definitely on the fast track right now. It's creating chaos and division on purpose, and grooming our students to become activists. And meanwhile, they might become political activists, but they can't read and they can't do math. So we have completely, you know, as a former teacher, one of my priorities is mastery. Academic mastery of skills, and we've lost that. You know, in Tennessee, I think it's 2/3 of our students across the state are not reading at grade level.
That's unbelievable.
That's embarrassing.
And you know, California is definitely the place where the statistics are sneaking out, and the California Teachers Association just held a conference last year at which two middle school teachers bragged about how they monitored students' internet histories to recruit them into transgender clubs, again, without telling parents and encouraging other teachers to do the same. The San Diego Unified School District also trains teachers how to answer questions about porn, masturbation, and the taste of, I'm not even going to tell you. I wish I didn't have to say that. Where are they finding these teachers to hire?
Well, so while we've been indoctrinating students in public schools, our universities have been indoctrinating teachers. So, and even if a teacher escaped indoctrination at a university, they've been going through professional development through their school district. So you've got these teachers' unions that have a lot of power and control and money, and they're pushing a lot of this agenda. It's hard to find teachers that haven't gone a little bit woke. I'm not saying they all are. I think there's still a lot of very good teachers out there that are conservative. But I would say that we all have a little bit of indoctrination from our experiences as a teacher. It's something that needs to be questioned daily. But when you're in a bubble of education and that's the conversation you are hearing day in and day out, it's very hard to go against the approved narrative. You know, we've always known that for teachers, they tend to lean a little more to the left. It's very difficult for conservative teachers to be who they are as a conservative, to stand up for conservative values.
Yeah. And on top of that, California itself became a sanctuary state for the mutilation of children and, believe it or not, statutory rape, sex with a minor, pedophilia is no longer illegal there. It went from the porn capital of the world, mostly in Southern California, to now the child perversion capital. I left Washington State because I felt that my teen daughter was unsafe in her swim club locker room when they opened it to biological males, but my birth state is so much worse for now. How does that translate to Tennessee?
Well, so in Tennessee, what I tell people is that this is Tennessee right now looks a little bit like California did in the 80s and the 90s. And I hear from a lot of, you know, we do have a lot of California refugees here in Tennessee, and I hear from many of them, they feel exactly the same way. Like we move in, I had a little bit of a honeymoon period where we really did feel like we had just landed in the most conservative part of the country. And then in about 2018 is when I saw the writing on the wall, and you know, these new Californians coming in aren't even getting that honeymoon period. It's like they're getting here and they're surprised by what they're seeing. I had to go through a bias anti-white training in Williamson County Schools in 2018. Basically a training telling the teachers, you know, that you are racist, you white teachers are the problem, and you're the reason why students are struggling. And, you know, many teachers just sit there and they take it. That was the beginning of the end for me in Williamson County Schools. That's when I realized that my days were numbered.
Yeah, you're one of the smart ones. You know, Libs of TikTok is a website or a Twitter handle, I guess, and it has hundreds of these examples of these kids, these teenage adults, well, whatever they are, older adults, younger adults, and they're proud and happy with themselves being these perverters of young minds. How did your teaching profession get here with these training skills that are so sick and the hiring practices that would allow this? Is it just the American Teachers Federation, or is it an entire industry that's
gone
bad?
You're seeing a lot of younger teachers kind of in that category. Most of the teachers I see on the links of TikTok videos are a younger generation of teachers.
That's what I was trying to say.
And so the teachers that are in my generation, they're a little bit older, are probably just being very silent, and it's allowing, it's just creating a space for this to continue and go on. And every school district has different policy views as far as what they can even film or put on video. In Williamson County was very strict about what you were allowed to do on social media and say, and so a lot of that was very monitored, but in other districts, it's perfectly allowed.
Well,
until
really
there's public backlash.
They're just outing themselves to the parents with a big, you know, finger in the eye of the parents saying, we're going to do this regardless of your distaste for what we're doing with your children 40 hours a week.
End of the day, the school building is on fire. People need to rescue their children.
Absolutely.
You just got to rescue your kids.
The problem is you can get out of public school if you can afford it, but now the private schools are doing the same thing. And you've seen the controversial third grade retention law issue around holding kids back from lost learning during COVID. I'm sure you've seen this. Any thoughts on that for next year?
Yeah. So when I taught in California, I taught third grade, and I sat in many of those retention meetings, and some of those students were retained, and I had them for a second year. I am not opposed to a standard and a hard line. I think that those decisions aren't necessarily best made by someone who doesn't know the child. I think you have to look at all the factors. And I know they're going to take into consideration if that's an English language learner. That's the population I've typically worked with. And so those students obviously are going to perform differently. But my biggest issue with the retention law is that they're going to use one measure, and that would be TCAP. And I don't agree that you can make a determination about a child and their reading ability based off of a computer standardized test. I think that's inappropriate.
Well, I've seen, I've been a big voice against the AFT, the NEA, the National Association of Independent Schools, Association of Counselors and School Nurses. They kick out resource officers, but add the pro-trans nursing staff. The textbooks, the libraries, it's like whack-a-mole with how many angles they come at our kids. Why?
Yeah. I mean, I would say there's this is spiritual warfare. There's an enemy coming for our children, and we're waking up to it. It didn't just show up in the last couple of years. This has been ongoing. I think COVID helped us to become more aware of what's happening in education. But this all goes back to one enemy, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. This is all spiritual warfare. Say that again.
Satan never sleeps, right?
Right. There's always going to be a push as well for governments to have ultimate control. And, you know, in Tennessee, there's an initiative, as well as in other states, for this whole child, whole school, whole community. This is a push, an agenda for the government to end up basically replacing parents. We already see government as replacing God in schools because we don't allow prayer. We don't allow the Bible. We don't allow any religious instruction of any kind. God is not welcome in schools. So government has replaced God. And they want to replace parents as well. They want to determine what sex or gender your kids should be and what they should be exposed to and what they should be reading and what pronouns they should be using. And they're just planting these. They're doing the devil's work.
Those are the descriptions or the descripting words of communism as well. And we know that is an anti-God, demonic government way to go. Back to California for a second, it's using classrooms not only for CRT and the things we've been talking about, but to push surgeries, puberty blockers, and hormone treatments as education and keeping parents in the dark. Is this all for Planned Parenthood donations that end up in Democrats' pockets, or is there another institution or entity that's driving this besides, like you said, demonic?
Yeah, well, I would think that, I mean, if you think about the death and destruction, and obviously that is demonic, but in order to gain this type of control over a large population, you have to use extreme measures. Fear, for example, is one of those measures that's being used. These are all out of the communist playbook, like you mentioned. I definitely think there's a lot of influence from China. I know there's an influence in governors across the country. And there's an influence in our, you know, we've seen the influence on TikTok. We see the influence in our curriculum that we're using. We've got just these very China-friendly ties and policies. And I think that's ultimately the goal is you've got to, if you're going to take over a country, if you're going to rule a country, you have to transform from within. And so you've got to destroy the family. You've got to destroy Christianity.
Yeah,
right. Faith. None of those things can exist.
Right down to the publishing company making the textbooks. So now back to you. You were a Wilco teacher and got indefinitely suspended for refusing the gross, filthy, bacteria-ridden masks, right? Why did Wilco take so long after the governor made it illegal? And are you getting reinstated with back pay?
So I was actually suspended in September of 2020.
Wow.
So this was actually pretty early on and then ultimately terminated in 2023. Like, I think it was March. No, I'm not being reinstated. I'm sorry, 2022. Yes,
yeah.
Sorry.
Not in the future.
No, 2021. Sorry. So suspended in 2020 and then terminated the following March. I'm not being reinstated or getting my job back, nor have I asked. I believe that God opened a path and a new door for me, and I'm happy with that. And I think that I can have a more positive, greater impact across the entire state, and an impact in education. And just I'm still teaching. I'm just teaching adults, grassroots, instead of small children. In my previous role, I have maybe 10 to 15, maybe 20 students. And it was great. And I loved those years, and I appreciated my students and the staff that I worked with, but I can have a greater impact now.
Yeah.
So I saw the writing on the wall for me. I think I can have a better impact on the outside because you're very, much, kept under a thumb when you are on the inside of education.
That is definitely the silver lining, and the blessing is that you found a different path and it's working out for you. You did tell off Jason Golden, the superintendent, and all 12 board members, school board members. How'd they take that?
Which tell off are you referring to?
The one that's on YouTube.
Oh, I didn't even know there was one on YouTube. I haven't seen it. Was I addressing the board? I don't even remember because I've addressed the board a couple of times. So I'm sorry. I don't even know.
Well, whichever one you feel this reminds you, or we move on.
So
it's up to you.
I have a good relationship with a couple of our school board members. So I've had some good conversations there. I've had some reach out and want to know a little bit more. I think that for the most part, many of them don't want to be seen talking to me or listening to me. And it is what it is. I think that parents, on the other hand, appreciate what I have to say and what I share. And I get that when I go across the state and talk about woke education.
So you did get parent support, and you weren't effectively shunned by them. They believe that you're fighting for their children, and they appreciate that.
Well, I would hope so. But I sometimes just move forward with what I believe I'm called to do, and I don't necessarily worry about the opinions of everybody, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, you said, at least in the quote that I had, independent thinkers are not welcome in Williamson County schools.
Oh, yeah.
Battleground Academy, where all the wealthy musicians and artists' children go, is now teaching CRT, which Governor Lee made illegal. And Harpeth Hall, 150 years old, all-girls private school, opened enrollment to biological males, boys, XY chromosomes, even against donor and alumni wishes. What other schools are advancing this without parent buy-in?
Well, I hear from activists across the state that have kids in public schools. And, you know, even just from the Chromebooks, one of the things that makes it all very challenging is how difficult it is for parents to even find the materials, because, you know, the kids don't come home with textbooks anymore that you can flip through. Everything is online. So it's nearly impossible for a parent to really vet the material that their child's being exposed to. Mm. There's, you know, multiple apps and articles and pages and videos. And so I do hear from parents. I see examples of inappropriate material in our schools. You know, we even have a school here in Williamson County that is hosting a gay straight alliance type club at a middle school and at a high school. And one of the things that they're promoting is the polyamory, which is the multiple relationships, multiple partners. I mean, these are 12-year-olds.
What school is that?
That I believe was Grassland Middle School.
Grassland, that's where the furries are too, I think. At least that's allegedly.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of furries. I'm not sure how true it is. I personally don't know of it.
Yeah.
There was
a senator, for those that don't know, that went on publicly said that kids are asking for litter boxes and being asked to be treated like furries, which are people who think they're cats, or I don't know. It's crazy. The Kentucky Supreme Court just ruled states can't spend money on private or charter schools, and Republican Governor Andy Beshear said we can't send public money to private or charter schools. This answer is to improve our public school system. Tennessee seems to think different, with 100 Hillsdale Classic Education charters after some fighting over that. How do we make sure that happens?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, because in Williamson County, we've never had a charter school application be approved. So it starts with your school board. You have to mobilize as a community. You've got to find conservative, charter school friendly, pro parents' rights type candidates. And you've got to get out there and get behind them or rally behind them, and you've got to flip those school boards. That's your first step. When you have conservatives on a school board, you will have a much better chance of getting a charter school application approved.
Okay. I've also heard that the school boards are kind of powerless now that the federal government has sort of gotten their nose under the tent and started putting strings attached. And so a lot of yelling and screaming that goes towards the school boards and even the superintendent, they can nod their heads and say they'll do something, but they really can't, because they're being told from much higher above, unless you want to give that money back, like Penny Schwinn was threatened with the letter, you got to do what we say to do. And that has a lot to do with the Title IX, with the sports and the CRT and all the rest. So it's getting to be quite messy, almost a states versus federal rights issue.
Right. So that doesn't apply to the charter school process. In Tennessee, we are in a good position to eliminate the federal funding for education. It is not a majority of our budget. We could 100% just cut ties and focus on kids in Tennessee and what is best for them, without the intrusion of the federal government. The Department of Education is not a constitutional department, as is true of many of the other departments, the federal agencies. So this is something I think you're gonna see more of across the country. But you even have states like Arizona that are doing, you know, basically like a school voucher program, where parents have an allotted amount of money and they can spend it how they see fit for their child. I think Virginia is another state that's looking at doing something along those lines. And I have some mixed feelings about how that could be corrupted, but I think it's a start.
Okay. On their website for Citizens for Renewing America, I see other things than just schools. So I see big tech, and our attorney general is going after them on privacy. CRT, not supposed to be taught here, but Battleground is, like we just said. Election integrity, Heritage.org voted Tennessee number one for best elections, but the methodology may be misleading. Secure border, we have an illegal problem here, no doubt. Marsha Blackburn has just been out saying that the Biden administration wants to drop a bunch of new ones into Tennessee after this Title 42 goes away. Ending endless wars, that's a hard one, up to $70 billion now to Ukraine. It'll probably go to 100 soon. Big government, healthy communities, and COVID. What is your wheelhouse on those amazing things, and how did you get involved in them in the first place?
Well, so through a lot of prayer, I was really praying for God to open a lane for me. I never considered myself an activist in the past, but I definitely feel strongly about my principles, and I feel like I'm fairly bold in standing up for them. I was only one of two teachers in the entire school district that stood up to that mask mandate. But as far as all of the issues, I do cover all of the issues across the state of Tennessee. It is a lot. We until recently haven't really talked a whole lot about border issues in Tennessee, but now it looks like that's going to be a conversation we're going to have more of. Election integrity. So in Tennessee, we recently started a coalition of citizens across the state who are involved with election integrity, and we're bringing people together across the state and building a task force in every county, and we're talking about several issues. The Heritage Foundation scorecard only looked at a few things. We do a few things correct in Tennessee, but we have some other things that are just leaving doors wide open for a lack of integrity. So we do have a petition out currently that is also kind of goes along with four different pieces of legislation. So the petition is to return to a hand-marked paper ballot that would be secure, serialized currency grade paper, to return to precinct voting and a hand count, and to return to voting day instead of voting 2.5 weeks. So that's what our petition has. And then we have legislation for each of those items as well.
If you were successful with those, Tennessee would be the perfect state of the 50, because none of them do that and they all should. Yeah. So that would be fantastic.
We want to lead the nation. If Heritage is going to say we're number one with a score of 84 out of 100, we want to be number one with a score of, 99 or 100 out of 100.
I agree. Besides the leadership summit, what else is coming up for you in 2023?
So I travel across the state and meet with groups. Any group that has an America First agenda, I want to go. I want to meet with them. I want to talk to them about the organization and what we stand for. I want to share we want to be a resource to them, to equip them. One of the things that we do most is to help educate the activists and bring them up to speed on the issues. And so we have some great resources for that. We have a lot of stuff on our website, some primers and great things for people to read to really get educated. You can't fix what you don't know. And then we also have a weekly call that people, activists, can be a part of. And that's for anyone across the nation. And that's really going to give them that up-to-date intel weekly coming out of DC and how they can apply that in their home state. So that's really what I'm doing, is meeting with groups and leaders across the state and equipping them and supporting them. And then obviously we have a session that starts in January. So, we have some legislative priorities in our state. And so I'll be keeping a close eye on those things as well.
Great. The former director of the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, under Donald Trump, Russ Vought, runs that. Vought, I think, is how you say it.
Vought.
What's he like to work for?
He's one of the most humble people I've ever met. He you can see him and see that for yourself. He's a frequent guest on War Room and some Fox Business interviews as well. He definitely picks fights. He picked the speaker fight that we're in right now, where we're opposing McCarthy as speaker. He has also been the first one to come out saying that we're calling for a church-style committee for these federal agencies that are weaponized against Americans.
Wow.
And he just recently came out with a budget proposal that ends woke spending in our federal government. So he's got a biblical worldview. He's very humble, but he's bold.
Awesome. Sounds like a great boss. So let me ask you this back to the other topic, because you are an educator. When you had to get recredentialed to Tennessee schools, Williamson County schools, did you see a difference from California? And did you say things that made you think, uh-oh, this is going the wrong way? Because you had mentioned, like, California in the 80s. Well, we fast forward to 2020s and California is off the cliff. And why are teachers and superintendents and principals so permissive?
So in this, in recertifying, I went through and took all the Praxis tests again. I think there were like eight or so of them. I didn't see anything glaringly obvious at that point. It wasn't until I was going through professional development and, you know, the anti-white bias training, that kind of thing. And then seeing all of the tools, there's some apps on the Chromebooks for kids that are very, very left-leaning, apps like BrainPop and BrainPop Junior, that it's also social justice warrior type stuff woven throughout those. And so they're, you know, sometimes it surprises you when you come across things and you have to quickly like stop and go, okay, I got to regroup. I can't show that to students. But those were the big eye openers for me. I think probably too, some of my indoctrination from California maybe was even a little bit more advanced than what they were doing out here in Tennessee. So because I worked with, you know, a population of students with a mostly Spanish background, you know, the push for multiculturalism was huge in California in the 90s. And so that was just kind of getting started out here. And so that was nothing new to me. So it wasn't super alarming. As far as why the permissiveness, if it's a good question. It's a $1 million question. Why do we have a commissioner of education that is pushing these agendas on our kids, this woke whole child agenda, the racism in programs like Wit and Wisdom, you know, that our commissioner of education 100% was advocating for that curriculum to be in our schools. And it's in 33 counties or school districts in Tennessee. She comes from a background. She came through a program called She's for Change. So you can kind of walk back and see where she comes from and the agenda she's bringing. Who knows what connections she has outside of that are influencing her. It's not just her, obviously. There are other connections, but I'm going to, you know, keep going back to, you know, I think a lot of it comes from where's the money coming from.
Yeah.
You always have to find that money trail. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it ends up trailing back to China.
Your specialty was English as a second language. We have an illegal immigration problem here, maybe going to get worse. What did you see in the schools with kids of illegal parents?
So I didn't see a lot of that here in Tennessee. In California, that was definitely an issue in the 90s. And you don't know as a teacher. You don't know if a family is here legally or not. That's just not information schools collect. So you just know that they're coming to you with no English. That's all you know. And then here in Tennessee, I had students from all over the world. And so many of them were here because of the automotive industry or the healthcare industry. So they were here on work visas and lots of different language backgrounds. So California, mostly Spanish, here, a little bit of everything.
Did you see strings attached to COVID bailout funds for schools? I know schools get money from DC for every kid in attendance, but during COVID, obviously attendance was way down. So bailout money arrived and the unions like Randy Weingarten's ATF fought against opening the schools. Could you see the quid pro quo with the money to teach woke stuff like we're talking about?
Well, so with the first two ESSER payments, there weren't the strings attached, but definitely with the third ESSER payment to the schools, there were strings attached, which is why I had to be fired because it was a masking and a social distancing and all of that offering. I think even there was even something in there about offering vaccinations and all of that. Tell me the last part of your question again.
Basically, the third one is what I'm asking about, the strings attached. What were they? Like,
Oh, okay.
how
And
draconian
so,
were they to make people say, sure, I will be a superintendent of a school and allow for this stuff, or nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to fight back. And was the school threatened to be closed? Were that all the teachers fired? I mean, what was
So there
so...
was in that third payment, there was a string attached for social emotional learning programs. So we are seeing the results of that now, where school districts are purchasing programs. They're pushing out surveys to students, which is data mining, collecting data from students, some of it very sensitive. It's also just kind of warming our kids up to constantly having to give up their information over time. And that information will be used against them. It's being used to build out a social credit system. And our kids are just becoming more and more accustomed to giving up their information. But some of this information they're asking is very personal about families and about the home life. And I understand when we want to help kids that have, an unfortunate situation. But teachers and counselors, they know how to identify those students that are in their classrooms, and they can make referrals. We don't need to be doing a blanket survey of every student in a school. So one of the things that I support in Tennessee is an opt-in versus an opt-out. So right now, often in different districts are doing this differently, but some districts, Davidson County being the one, Metro Nashville, they have a whole student packet, and if you can opt your child out, but you've got to go and locate it on the website. You've got to print this entire packet out. It's 12 pages long. You've got to complete them all, and then you've got to make multiple copies because you've got to, make sure every adult that comes near your child knows that you've opted them out of comprehensive sex education and COVID testing and all of these kinds of things. So we're looking at for this next session, there will be a bill that will make those types of programs an opt-in. So instead of a passive opt-in, whereas if you don't fill this out, you're automatically opting your child in. No. It needs to be the reverse. Parents need to, with a handwritten signature, opt their child into these programs if they choose.
And do you have sponsors already on in Nashville for that?
Yeah, I didn't write the bill. It's being written by some other activists. I just know of it, and I will definitely be supporting it. I don't know who will be carrying it yet.
Okay. So what's this? We have about 5 minutes left. So what's the solution? How do parents that hate this for our kids get them educated in the first place? I mean, we now, you said it, 1 in 3 kids in Tennessee can't read at grade level already. They want to hold back the third graders. Then, through all this confusion on gender and what's expected of them, how are they supposed to thrive as opposed to get a 4.0 to go to college? It's not realistic. So what are some solutions?
Well, the first thing is, like you mentioned, we have to educate people, not just parents. We need to educate the community because these children will be your neighbors, in the future. They will be running our country. So we're all invested in how they're being raised and educated. We have to educate parents on getting back to basics and getting back to mastery of academic skills in our schools. I still believe that parents are the best teacher. And so, I've homeschooled, I've done private school, and I've done public school with my two, and they're teenagers now. And I respect every family's right to make those decisions that are best for their family. If there's any possible chance someone can homeschool, I think that's the best thing that they could possibly do for their child.
Yeah,
You
and
do
I'm
not have
hoping the
to be.
majority is with you, absolutely, but and it's clear you want what's best for the kids. What kind of resistance are you getting from parents? They have the most at stake, and of course, the future of America and Tennessee's youth to participate in the future with college degrees and jobs for smart, educated people. Is there a solution out of Nashville that with Penny Schwinn and Governor Lee, or does it have to be the local school board and superintendent?
Yeah, it's from the bottom up. That's how we're going to get healthy, from the bottom up. So you got to get involved and engaged with your local school board. Find those conservative candidates and support them. Go to those school board meetings and communicate with your school board members. Build that relationship and influence. Let them know when they're doing something that you do approve and appreciate. But then also be there as a resource. I can't stress that enough. You've got to know the issues and you've got to be there to be a resource. They cannot know everything. They need support for that.
And we obviously have Penny Schwinn from California and Governor Lee, who appointed her, that are sort of in the way. And we talked about the school board. So I'm wondering, do the parents, are they with you overwhelmingly, or are you getting pushback?
I don't have anybody really giving me pushback. I mean, I go to school board meetings and there's always a group of parents that they think that I guess they have a right to groom other people's children, and so they want this kind of stuff. And there's always going to be that group of parents. But I think overwhelmingly, when you explain to parents that they have a right to decide when those conversations take place, and that every child deserves to go to school and learn and learn about what's good and beautiful and what's true in the world, instead of having first graders focus on skin color, and dark and divisive concepts. No parent wants that. Now, if you want to teach your child that at home, I suppose you could. But in the schools, parents agree overwhelmingly that they want their children to go to school and to learn and to enjoy the process of learning. That's what we are built for. We are designed to learn, not just K-12, but to learn every day of your life. And we're killing the joy of learning for our children when we want to focus on divisive concepts, ask them, all these questions about sex and gender, and focus on race.
And it's confusing. But that's also why they don't want grandparents and people without kids to be in the schools to be able to attend those meetings, which the board is feckless to do anything anyway, I had said earlier. So what do you say to people that want to run for school board and try to change the complexity from, say, 10 to zero? I don't even want to call them liberals. Let's just say unopen-minded to, say, a 6-4 conservative or what have you. What do you say to folks like that?
So people that want to run for school board
To make a
and they're
change like
going
you're
to be
talking about.
faced with that opposition,
Yeah.
I would say you need to grow really thick skin. You need to know the issues, and you need to surround yourself with people that can support you on the issues. You need to listen to your constituents, obviously. But if you get voted in, that's a good sign that your constituents are with you. I can't help but think that, many of them, they get into that position and they end up doing whatever the superintendent suggests. And if you would just remember that you're there because voters put you there, you don't work for the superintendent, you don't work for Penny Schwinn, you work for the voters.
Yeah.
You're there for the voters and their children.
That's very refreshing to hear. Well, Andrea, we are out of time here, and thank you so much for coming on with me. I really appreciate it right before Christmas and everything. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and Center for Renewing America and follow you, etc.
Okay, so you can go to Center for Renewing America is americarenewing.com. And my email is Andrea, that's AUNDREA, at citizensrenewingamerica.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Andrea Go, AUNDREAGO.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks again for coming on. Merry Christmas to you and your
Thank
husband,
you.
and I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve.
Bye.
I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your
Welcome to the
knees.
Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind. Before we do, though, a quick Christmas movie update. The most watched U.S. households between 11/8 and 12/11. Number one, Christmas Vacation. 8.6 million of you watched that. Number two, Home Alone. 8.4 million. Three, Elf. 7.9. Number four, Four Christmases. 3.6 million. Number five, A Christmas Story. 3.4. Number six, two I've never heard of before, Falling for Christmas and Noel Diary, 2.8 each. Die Hard, number 8, 2.6. 9, How the Grinch Stole Christmas at 2 million. And number 10, The Holiday, 1.7. Well, how far we have fallen. Steve, what did you think of Andrea and Center for Renewing America?
Just a wonderful woman, and I'm not going to say a lot because this is a busy day and you got to get on the air, in the air. So great guest, great guest.
Thank you very much. She is great. All right. Little history lesson here. The 17th Amendment, my least favorite amendment to the United States Constitution, established the direct election of United States senators in each state. The amendment superseded Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1 and 2 of the Constitution, under which senators were elected by state legislatures. It also alters the procedure for filling vacancies in the Senate, allowing for state legislatures to permit their governors to make temporary appointments until a special election can be held. I don't like it because they are now open to elections, which means that they are open to special interests as opposed to being closer to the people through their legislatures. The amendment was proposed by the 62nd Congress in 1912, so 100 years, and became part of the Constitution on April 3rd, 1913, anniversary next year, on ratification by 3/4, 36, of the state legislatures. Sitting senators were not affected until their existing terms expired. The transition began with two special elections in Georgia and Maryland, then in earnest with the November 1914 election. It was complete on March 4th, 1919, when the senators chosen at the November 1918 election took office. Ironically enough, Utah rejected the amendment. So that's what I don't like, but here's what's going on in 2022. While only 1 in 5 Americans say they approve of their representation in Congress, all 29 Senate incumbents won re-election in the midterms. In fact, the 2022 cycle, capped by Senator Raphael Warnock, Democrat from Georgia, his victory last Tuesday, marks the first time in a century that not a single Senate incumbent lost. Please play clip number one.
I've been on this committee for decades, a lawyer for decades. I've never heard such a stupid thing from a judge or anybody else as that. You know, the immigration laws are complex enough anyway, but to say 3-year-old child can represent themselves and learn this. Now, I understand the department issued a statement the judge was somehow speaking in his personal capacity. I think I would have fired him on the spot. But I do know the department regularly pursues immigration cases against children, including toddlers, who don't have lawyers, even though DOJ has the authority to make sure these children have lawyers. Would you agree, the Justice Department agree, that a 3-year-old child cannot comprehend immigration law?
Well, Senator Leahy, again, I share with you your puzzlement over those statements. Well,
I'm not puzzlement, it's sheer anger.
And as well as the view that I know we all like to think that our children are precocious, but in no way does the Department of Justice feel that children of that age, or even, frankly, children even older, can or should represent themselves individually. And I'm sure those of you on this committee who are former prosecutors and former judges would find that a surprising occurrence were they to show up in your court as well.
So that's Senator Leahy from Vermont. He retired today. He's been there for about 100 years, and you think he's 121 years old. And he said, sheer anger. All right. So, Steve, do you think 3-year-olds can understand the legal process in immigration law?
No.
No, but he could. So, further on with this report, the lawmaker's historic showing stands in stark contrast with America's sentiments about Congress as a whole. Only 21% of Americans approve of Congress, Gallup reported in October. That rating has not risen above 40% since 2005. 74% of Americans, meanwhile, say the country is headed in the wrong direction, according to an August NBC poll. 58% of those polled said they are more worried than that America's best years may already be behind us. Let's play clip number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations to each of you on your nomination. And I've noted today that we have had several younger children in the audience with us, and I think that each of you deserve extra dessert of your choice at lunch. You have earned it. You all have been stellar in your behavior. Absolutely wonderful. Judge Edelman, I want to come to you. In 2020, in your role as a D.C. Superior Court judge, you released a man named Christian Wingfield. You remember that?
I do remember that case,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, he was pending trial in a felony gun case, but you went ahead and released him, correct?
Correct, I did.
Okay. And a few weeks after you released him, Mr. Wingfield participated in the murder of an 11-year-old child named Devon McNeil. You recall that?
I do recall that.
Okay. Devon was at a Stop the Violence cookout on the 4th of July when Mr. Wingfield and his friends decided to fight a warring crew. Devon was an innocent bystander who was caught in the crossfire. When you made the choice to release Mr. Wingfield, you knew these following facts. And I find it so interesting. So many of you have talked about, you know, having the facts, acting on the facts, and the importance of that to the judiciary. And I appreciate that you've brought that forward. But Judge Edelman, here are the things that you knew. You knew that he had multiple arrests for illegally possessing a firearm, and you knew that he had been identified as the person who, on another occasion, had been shooting a gun in the street at 1 p.m. in broad daylight. You knew that only a week earlier, another judge had written an opinion denying his motion for release because he was a danger to the community. You knew that releasing him with a GPS ankle bracelet wouldn't protect the community because he had already illegally fired a gun while he was on GPS monitoring for a prior offense. Despite knowing all this, you released Mr. Wingfield with a GPS ankle bracelet, and then he and his friends went on to murder.
All right. So, going further into this Washington Times article, the victories in the face of widespread dissatisfaction with Washington show the value of incumbency, as challengers often confront significant disadvantages in fundraising and name recognition. The results also suggest voters blame the other 98 senators over their own. Clip number three, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the past year and a half, we've seen a pattern from the Biden administration of nominating ideological zealots to our courts. A moment ago, Ms. Abudu, in answering questions from Senator Lee, you said you understood the difference between an advocate and a judge. Well, I'm sure you do. You've never served as a judge. You've spent your entire life as an advocate. And as an advocate on the extreme left, there has been a pattern of nominee after nominee that have been extreme zealots, but I have to say your nomination, when I look at your record, I find deeply concerning. The last 3 years you've served at the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a hateful and extreme place. And their hate, among other things, has led to horrific violence. I'm speaking in particular about the 2012 shooting at the Family Research Council here in Washington. There, a gunman sought to make a political statement by shooting as many members of the Family Research Council as possible, and he sought to smear their faces with Chick-fil-A sandwiches after he murdered them. He was only stopped due to the heroic efforts of the Family Research Council employee, Leo Johnson, whose courage saved many lives that day. The evidence in the case indicated that the shooter had assembled his targets by visiting the Southern Poverty Law Center website of so-called hate groups, where the Southern Poverty Law Center equated the Family Research Council with true bigoted hate groups like the KKK and the Nazi Party. Do you agree with your employer that the Family Research Council is equivalent to the KKK or the Nazi Party?
Senator Cruz, I would first respectfully state that although, yes, I have spent a big chunk of my career as a civil rights lawyer, early on in my career, I was actually a staff attorney with the 11th Circuit. So I started my career and my understanding of the legal profession from the position of being and representing the court to some extent and making
Okay, but being a staff attorney is not a judge. So could you answer the question, please?
In terms of the...
Do you agree with your employer, the Family Research Council, is comparable to the Ku Klux Klan or the Nazi Party?
Senator, as I shared with your colleagues earlier, I can't comment to that. I'm in the legal department.
Well, why can't you? I'm asking if you agree with them. You work for them. That's what they say. Their hateful rhetoric led to an attempted murder. Do you agree with them? You went to work for them knowing that their hate had led to this violence. Do you agree with that or not?
I went to work for the SPLC to help lead its voting rights practice group, and that is.
Do you agree with your employer,
Senator? Again, I can't.
So you're going to refuse to answer that.
Okay. Further on, in some of the closest watched Senate races, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, New Hampshire, Alaska, and Wisconsin, incumbents outraised their opponents by large margins. In Arizona, Senator Mark Kelly, Democrat, outspent Republican Blake Masters by $70 million. Senator Catherine Cortez Mastro, Democrat, Nevada, meanwhile beat opponent Adam Laxalt by more than $12 million. Clip number four, please.
Is that correct?
Senator, as I stated, I'm not sure if you were in here earlier, that case is still pending. He's not been convicted of any of those charges. And so I have to be really careful in how I frame my question.
Did he shoot his girlfriend in the head?
Senator, based on those were the allegations of the charge, yes.
So you're saying he didn't shoot his girlfriend in the head?
He has not been convicted of anything, is my understanding. And I know it's a very old case. It's 2017.
Well, when you granted him bond, did you think he had shot his girlfriend in the head? He was charged with shooting his girlfriend in the head, wasn't he?
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
Those are the allegations. When he initially appeared before me,
okay.
I denied his bond based on everything.
Let me start over. Okay.
So I think you may be getting the point here. Name recognition and cash may have helped incumbents win this cycle, but the 2024 map is more challenging. Three Democratic incumbents are up for re-election in states that voted for former President Donald Trump by more than 8 points. Senator John Tester, Democrat Montana, Sherrod Brown, Democrat Ohio, and Joe Manchin, Democrat West Virginia. Clip number five, please.
Secretary Granholm, today in the state of Missouri, the average price of gasoline today, as of this morning, is $4.10. Average price of diesel is $5.18. And I'm sure you've seen the reporting this morning that now AAA is projecting that gas prices will hit a national average of $6 a gallon by the month of August. Is this acceptable to you?
No, it is not. And you can thank the activity of Vladimir Putin for invading Ukraine and pulling essentially those barrels.
With all due respect, Madam Secretary, that's utter nonsense. In January of 2021, the average gas price in my state was $2.07. 8 months later, long before Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine, that price was up over 30%, and it has been going up consistently since. What are you doing to reverse this administration's policies that are drawing down our own supply of energy in this country, that are throttling oil and gas production in the United States of America? What are you doing about it?
With respect, sir, it is not administration policies that have affected supply and demand.
How can you say that when the price of gas was up over 30% from January
to...
Answer my questions. And it's my time, Madam Secretary, so why don't you answer my question? From January to August, the price of gasoline was up over 30%. In my state alone, it has been a continuous upward tick since then. And here's what your president did when he first came to office. He immediately re-entered the Paris Climate Accord. He canceled the Keystone Pipeline. He halted leasing programs in Anwar. He issued a 60-day halt on all new oil and gas leases. And
so the work of the federal courts touch upon many of the most significant issues affecting the American people, and federal judges exercise wide authority and discretion in the cases over which they preside. I think if the people paid more attention, they'd see it's the caliber of judges is what they're really unsatisfied with, and the senators that voted for them. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our Thought of the Week, but before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere and hit the subscribe button, and thanks for doing it. Those who educate children well are more to be honored than they who produce them, for these only gave them life, those the art of living well. Aristotle, one of the greatest intellectual figures of the Western history, he was the author of a philosophical and scientific system that became the framework and vehicle for both Christian scholasticism and medieval Islamic philosophy. I am indebted to my father for living, but my teacher for living well. Alexander the Great was 32 when he died in 323 BCE during his 13-year reign as the king of Macedonia. Alexander created one of the largest empires of the ancient world, stretching from Greece to northern India. His teacher was the legendary philosopher Aristotle. The chief wonder of education is that it does not ruin everybody concerned in it, teachers and taught. Henry Adams, the education of Henry Adams, American historian and a member of the Adams political family, descended from two U.S. presidents and Abraham Lincoln's ambassador to the United Kingdom. So he knew a thing or two. Look him up. Well, that's it for this episode and the last one before Christmas. Really hope you like it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com. Thank you, Andrea Gomez. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of millcreekviewonline.com. Peace in our time.
'Twas the week before Christmas, and through the Senate and House, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The earmarks were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The senators were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of pork danced in their heads. No budget was found, just mischief and debt, while the taxpayers hung their poor heads and wept. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, senators sprang from their oxygen. What was the matter? Away to the window they flew like a flash, tore open the shutters when they heard the word cash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a 4,000-page omni with endless debt year after year. With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now McConnell, now Schumer, now Pelosi and Vixen, on Biden, on Stupid, on Dumber and Blitzen, to debt, to bankruptcy, to free money for all. Now dash away, more cash for all. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As the economy threatened to run aground, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of earmarks he had flung on his back, an appropriator's dream opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. This spending season, instead of naughty and nice, Santa brought everyone something, regardless of price. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head, he said not to worry, there's always the Fed. He spoke not a word and went straight to his work. Undeterred by the debt, he turned with a jerk, for naughty Pentagon that lost billions last year, a fat stocking with extra cash and cheer. And don't forget a delicious candy cane, sweet with $40 billion to tide over Ukraine. Because of the climate, it's not PC to leave coal. No one seems to care because we're trillions in the hole. Don't worry about leaving the budget a mess. Democrats have given you 87,000 agents of the IRS. So St. Nick laid his finger aside his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, his economist agog, numbing the pain with a cup of eggnog. Up and away through the countries in tatters, free stuff for all, sky-high prices don't matter. His last words as the wind lifted his sleigh, if people lack money, just print, it's okay. But I heard him exclaim, ere he drove out of sight, happy bankruptcy to all, and to all a good night.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.